Hello, and welcome to A Writer's Journey. I'm Sarah Whitford, and my co-host is Terrence Zepke. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about 5 steps to getting an agent and/or publisher. Now, as you all know, I'm really excited about being an independent author, but Terrence is traditionally published, so I am extremely grateful she's able to lend us her expertise in this area. So, Terrence, take it away.
Hey, well, I did want to, the other week we talked about some of the different approaches you can do to indie publishing. We talked about everything from hiring a book shepherd to subsidy publishing. And so I forgot to mention during that episode another source that I thought maybe we should just touch on. But only because I don't know much about it, but it's something that's becoming increasingly popular, and that's crowdfunded publishing. Now, I don't know if you know much about it, but they claim it's a cross between traditional and indie publishing. But there's two types of crowdfunded publishing. One is called a fundraising platform, and that's where you, the author, raise the money to self-publish. So that would be the indie part of it. And then the other type is a full-service book publisher who uses crowdfunding to determine their publishing projects. Yeah, so I don't know much about that, but I do know with the fundraising. Well, I have some information on some companies and options, and maybe we'll just put those on our website.
I know. I think Kickstarter is one that I think a
Kickstarter is a
lot of
big
authors are
one,
using now.
and there's three other ones that I know about. And then for the full service book publishers, there's two that seem fairly reputable in that regard. So
We'll put
I
those in the
just
show notes then.
Right. So, like I said, I don't want to spend a lot of time. I just wanted to make sure to touch on that as we move on to the 5 steps that you need to follow to get an agent and/or publisher.
And you know, Terrence, I we've talked about this. We've talked about this off the air and on the air. But as much of a cheerleader as I am for independent publishing, I would not rule out ever being traditional. I mean, traditionally published. But you know, it would probably just be if I was writing in a different genre that didn't require as much heavy, intensive research as the historical fiction I'm doing. You know what I mean? But so I'll be interested in hearing the advice that you have on this today.
Well, how it all starts, and I'm sure you know the basics of this at least, is the query letter. And that's because it's called a query letter because you're querying an agent or a publisher to gauge their interest in your project. And I just want to say right up front with this that so many writers will tell you that have gone indie, they'll tell you that just don't do this. They don't respond. It's not good. It's not worth it. Now, but that's not true. There's still a lot of people being traditionally published. I think a lot of people don't ever get published because they mess up during this query process. But it's so simple once you understand the rules. And so I've broken it down to 5 things today. And number one, you've got to make sure you approach the right agent or publisher. This is where it goes south for a lot of writers because there's no point in pitching your project. You write historical fiction. And what if you're pitching this to agents that represent
Sci-fi or
sci-fi or whatever, steampunk or, whatever? Then they're not interested in your project, and it doesn't mean your project wasn't good. It's just not what they represent. So you have wasted your time and energy, and you think you're getting 20 rejections. You're not, you just didn't approach the right people. So you've got to do some research and make sure that the agent actually represents your genre. And if you're going directly to publishers, then you need to make sure that they're publishing this genre. For instance, if you've written this killer children's book and you're querying, a lot of publishers won't publish children's books. And so you need to make sure you find a publisher that actually does publish that thing. And this seems like a no-brainer, doesn't it? But yet it's a huge stumbling block. And there are resources, both online and publications out there, that will detail what agency handles, and then you can go to their site and you can see, because the other big thing is if they're currently accepting submissions. A lot of times they're closed to new submissions. So maybe they do handle your genre, but they're not taking on any new clients at this time. So You just need to make sure that you address your query to a specific person.
So do your homework, people.
Do your homework.
Do your homework, yes.
Don't say to sir or to whom it may concern. You need to address it to a specific person in the agency. And don't send it to multiple people in the same agency. That's a taboo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you got to send. You got to pick one person that you think is best suited. And a recommendation is to try to connect with the agent. If you see something in their bio, because they all have their bios on the agency websites, as well as some information. If you find any information in Writer's Digest or Literary Marketplace or anything like that, they might tell you that they love to cook Italian food.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hey, that's you have all these great Italian recipes handed down from your Italian grandmother. You like to cook Italian food, too. So there's something, you know. What if their favorite destination for vacation is Africa?
Mm-hmm.
They have up on their thing that they love, and you just got back from a trip from Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. If you find some way to personally connect, that just gives you a little extra. I mean, it's not going to be a deal breaker if they don't like your book, but it just is in a way that they might keep reading.
Mm-hmm.
And going with it there. So, and also, number two, follow the submission guidelines to the letter. Don't be trying to second guess what they're laying out to you. If they've told you they only accept queries by snail mail, don't try to email
mm-hmm.
a submission to them. And with if they do by snail mail, if you don't include the self-addressed stamped envelope, you're never going to hear from them. You know, so
right.
And don't include anything that's not requested. And, again, this seems like a no-brainer, but some people get enthusiastic and they think if they could just see a sample chapter,
yes,
they would want to do this. No, they will ask you for sample chapters if they want to pursue it. Do not send, because these are just things that just turn them off.
Read the instructions. Again,
right.
People, it goes back to reading the instructions. You know, I never went through, I mean, I've never been through the querying process. I haven't even attempted it. But, I mean, I've obviously seen a little bit about it. I've seen how, you know, sometimes if there are agencies out there, they'll say, you know, some of them will actually say, seems like I've seen, paste your manuscript in the body of an email. And then some
yeah, they
say,
don't like attachments.
Right, right. And so they'll have different things and, you know, but definitely read the instructions because, you know, it's going to give you a better shot if you don't just annoy them right off the bat by doing
yes.
the wrong thing.
Yeah, if you send bribes or gifts, that's not a good idea. I've read a lot from agents how they do not appreciate that little thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So some agents will ask for the first five pages.
Okay.
Don't send more than that. I know you may think, but the story's just getting good here. I don't want to cut it off here. Well, if it's just getting good, then they're going to want to read more. They'll ask you for more.
Mm-hmm.
But they've asked for five pages, and they need to be the first five pages. I've actually read people where they've queried about that. Does it have to be the first five pages, and do they have to be consecutive? Yes. An agent doesn't want to read five random pages out of your book or the last five pages or something in the middle. They want the first five pages. This is going to tell them if they're interested in reading any more. So, again, like Sarah said, go with the instructions. I've also heard where people have sent stuff FedEx thinking that there's no point in paying for rush delivery. That's not going to make the agent, oh, I got this by FedEx. I feel like I need to read this next.
No.
because
people don't understand that like businesses, corporations deal with FedEx all the time. It's not special to them when they get something via FedEx.
No. Know?
Like it would be to you. If you receive something at your home via FedEx, you're going to think, oh, this, you know, this is really important. But corporations, you know, major businesses and things, they deal with that all the time, and it's just not impressive. So.
And in your submission somewhere, whether they ask for this or not, you should include your genre and your word count.
Mm-hmm.
Let them know how many pages it is and who you're writing it for there. So enough said about that. But number three, this is a big one for me here, don't get cutesy. And by this I mean you stick to a one-page, 12 font size, single-spaced, Times Roman. You know, don't go out there and be looking for, you know, really wild looking
fonts.
If you write sci-fi, maybe that they would appreciate that you put it in this sci-fi looking font.
I can't imagine anyone thinks that's a good idea, but surely there are some people who probably do, because there's always someone who likes the Comic Sans font or some other kind of.
And they might
really
think that this would give them a leg up because this will stand out.
No.
And so they just really don't appreciate that kind of effort there. So, but you stick with the three rule approach when you send a submission thing here, and that is your hook, your mini synopsis, and your bio. So your hook is your one sentence thing that you grab their attention right away. Mm-hmm. That's the first line there. Then two is your little mini synopsis where you expand on your hook. And then three is your author bio where you might mention your education, any credentials. And if you don't have any, that's all right. You know, if you're a debut author, you know, but if you have written a couple of articles or, you know, whatever it is, you know, that you might be able to put in there, just don't use gimmicks or anything else that tries to distinguish you by just don't go rogue.
So let me ask you a question. When you say the hook, what you're specific, are you talking about like what we might think of as like the tagline or the blurb that be on the, you know, some sort of blurb that would be the descriptive thing on the back of the book, or what are you talking about specifically?
Yeah. Okay, well, let's talk about a hook for Da Vinci Code. A murder in the silent after-hour halls of the Louvre Museum reveals a sinister plot to uncover a secret that's been protected by a clandestine society since the days of Christ. Boom.
Okay, I gotcha.
And what about The Sanctuary? Four friends, three shocking secrets, two marriages on the rocks, one special place, the sanctuary, that holds the key to everything.
I have read The Sanctuary. It is an emotionally... It is an emotionally powerful novel, but it's also very fun.
Yeah. And what about Smuggler's Gambit? When 17-year-old Adam Fletcher is forced into an apprenticeship, he unwittingly becomes a pawn in a smuggling war. That's your hook.
Okay.
That's the first thing, okay?
Yep.
Then your synopsis. Soon he's forced to make a tough decision. Will he agree to become a spy performing a civic duty to the crown, or will he risk everything, possibly even putting his own family in danger, to protect his new master? Secrets will be revealed, loyalties will be questioned, betrayals will be uncovered, and the young man's character will be put to the test. That is a great follow-up to your hook.
Oh, wow, great. Well, that sounds fantastic. If only I were querying agents right now.
Yes, so now you have a better idea.
Okay, I gotcha.
The hook, and then you follow up, add some meat to the, to the bone there.
Okay.
Now, number four on this, many agents are now only accepting e-queries. So I recommend if that's the case that you're finding when you're doing it, be sure and check your spam filter, because if you've got a high spam filter, that maybe somebody that's not on your list of normal communications, they could end up in your spam folder and you're missing out an agent telling you they want to read more.
That's right.
So that's just a little tech thing to be thinking about here. And I found that out. Myself, I was getting a lot of comments from things on my website and all that come to me first for approval before I do it, and they were all sitting in a spam folder. I didn't know it.
Oh, no.
And when I finally opened it up, it was like, oh, God, look, here's all these comments from people, and somehow they just they got snagged in a spam folder, you know, because they weren't part of my normal contacts.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just, it seems like a nothing thing, but it's certainly something here. And last but not least, I just say due diligence. Two words, due diligence. And that's just across the board. You want to do your due diligence regarding researching agencies and or publishing houses. We talked about that in step number one. You want to do your research regarding specific agents within each agency. You know, again, we talked about that. You just got to make sure you're getting to the right person. And again, you know, I found that sometimes people look and they want it to be the head of the agency. That seems like that's the right person to send it to.
Mm-hmm.
But it may not be the head of the agency that's the best person to pitch your book to. Sometimes it's best to do it to one of the new agents who is more open to taking new clients than some of these agents that have been in the business 15 years and have a pretty established clientele and have a certain expectation of what they're looking for. So new agents, young agents, are always more susceptible to accepting debut authors. So again, like I said, just do your research and make sure who you're submitting to is the best person for that. And again, for the agency, it may not be. A lot of people want to be with all the big ones in New York, but that may not be the best approach for you. Mm-hmm. A smaller agency may be more suitable for your needs. So anyway, and I would say do your due diligence when it comes to submissions.
Okay.
You got to just hammer at it. It may take 2 or 10 or 24 or 50 pitches before you have success.
Do you think people should send out, you know, a whole lot of submissions all at once? Or do you have any recommendations on how?
Absolutely. Unless the agency specifically says that they do not accept multiple submission. Because most agencies don't care if you put it out there to other agencies
okay.
at the same time. Because you're losing so much time.
Right.
It can be 3 months before you hear back from that agent. And you don't be sitting on your hands for 3 months and then sending out to the next guy.
Okay.
For the next guy. So for me, unless, and I tell you the truth, I wouldn't fool with anybody that tells you that they don't want to deal with someone that's sending it out to other agencies. They want exclusive first look, in other
uh-huh.
words.
Uh-huh.
I wouldn't fool with that. That's just me, but, you know, I don't think that's fair to ask people to wait 3 months to hear back from you and not be able to submit to anybody else during that time. And so that's just my thing. But and there is no magic number. I've had people ask me before, how many people should I pitch before I just, you know, abandon this? There isn't a magic number. If you've ever read anything about some of the best-selling authors, you know, Nicholas Sparks had like 100 rejections in a drawer when he got his first book finally published.
Now, didn't J.K. Rowling go through several?
Yes.
I can't remember if it was agents or publishers or what, but it seems like she got turned down a lot too before.
And she ended up with a very small publisher for the first book, actually. And, you know, there's no magic number, but if you believe in yourself as a writer and you believe in your project, I just tell you, don't give up. You can regroup, but never surrender. So, in other words, if you've sent this out to 24, you know, agents, and they've all rejected it, then okay, maybe it's time to rework your pitch.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Well, let me ask you about this because you know we want to give people advice that's going to just help them out and however we can. And when people submit these query letters to agents and things like that, do agents typically respond with, you know, constructive criticism or the reason why they rejected it, or do they just usually say not interested?
Unfortunately, agents do not tell you the reason. What I've done in the past is put a little form in with my self-addressed stamped envelope,
uh-huh.
and I will say, you know, I have reasons. I will say, not accepting submissions at this time, not interested, didn't like what I read, having a bad hair day. Actually, one of my choices, you know. And so I have like 4 things on there, and they can just check the one. And then if they want, they can write a little note at the bottom of it. But I've done all the work for them. They don't have to print anything out, write anything or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I've made it easy for them. They can tell me I didn't like what I read. I'm not accepting submissions at this time. I don't think I can sell this. You know,
right?
Whatever, you know. And so that way, at least I've gotten feedback that I wouldn't have gotten if I had just left it to them. Because they just have form letters. They're just form rejection letters.
Uh-huh.
And they're just a stack of them on their desk. And they just, you know, they just put it in your self-addressed stamp envelope and send it to you. Because they're going through, you know, hundreds of these things. We can, you know.
Sure.
And so if you want to find out why they rejected it, then you've got to do your part. And so I always submit this in so that I can find out, you know, okay, well, if they say they just didn't like what they read, at least you know that's it. And I'm trying to think, I never had anyone check the bad hair day.
Oh, my goodness.
But I figured that might give them a chuckle. But I have heard before that agents, it all depends on what is happening at the moment that they're trying to read your thing. You know, if they're distracted as they've started reading your pitch, they may never get back to it.
Uh-huh.
If they, I mean, there's all kinds of things that you can't even begin to imagine, just like, you know, other people. So, you know, you just want to do your part. And so maybe your pitch needs reworking. Maybe if they keep asking for these sample pages, you keep sending those, you're not getting any feedback, and maybe you need to rework the beginning of your novel. Uh-huh. Maybe it's starting out too slow. Maybe it's, you know, whatever. But to that, I would suggest that's where the conferences and writing workshops and writing groups and things like that come in handy, where you could get some feedback. You know, so because you may think it's the greatest thing ever, but you may be a bit biased.
Yes. That's, yeah. Look, and that, on that note, this applies to all writers, whether you're planning to go independent or go traditional. Don't be so quick to reject constructive criticism. You need to be open to feedback on anything that you write. And that doesn't mean you have to take everyone's suggestions. That doesn't mean you have to write by committee, you know, but you need to be open. And I'll just share this because the whole situation with my novel is so fresh, you know, it's just come out last month. But, you know, when I wrote my manuscript and I went through and did my, you know, first couple of rounds of revisions, and then I sent it out to beta readers. Terrence was one of my beta readers, and you know, she gave me some very frank feedback. The way I had originally written it, she was like, "Do you really want me to tell you what I think?" And I was like, "Please tell me, you know." And you said that your mom, I think it was, you know, had told you, don't tell her. But yeah, you told me, and I'm really grateful for it, that the first six chapters were a snooze. And that is the kind of feedback I was looking for. You know, a lot of my beta readers, I think, were just, they were old friends or, you know, other people like that. And they just, you know, my brother, Sam, also had some really great feedback. But you had that, and it was really helpful information. You said ditch the first six chapters. You know, maybe work some of that stuff in as flashbacks, which I did when I went through and did another revision. And, of course, then, you know, when my manuscript was sent to my copy editor, who is fabulous, he read it all, and he says, "Why isn't this in chronological order?" So then he suggested I go back and put things back in chronological order, but I knew, based on what Terrence had told me, not to put them back in chronological order the way that they were. I knew that even if I was going to go back and put them back in chronological order, you know, it was going to need more punch right off the bat. And Marcus had some really good, Marcus Trower is my copy editor, but he had some really good feedback on that, as far as how I could maybe structure things a little bit in the beginning to help things get picked up at a much quicker pace from right off the bat. But I was receptive to all of that, because why? There are people who are reading this with fresh eyes, and they know how they're responding and reacting to the novel as they read it, or to the manuscript as they read it. And it's important to me to get that feedback. You need honesty. You know, you need people who are going to be willing to be honest with you, so that you can improve your work and make it something that people are going to want to keep turning the pages, which, from what I'm hearing so far, that's the effect that the Smuggler's Gambit has now. People pick it up and they start reading it, and they, you know, really are just drawn right in to the story. And but it wouldn't have been possible without your feedback, Terrence, and without, you know, some of the feedback from my copy editor. So anyway.
And so, yeah, you need to make sure that you have good beta readers that will tell you some honest feedback. And I guess if we just touch 1 second on this, because this isn't really relevant to this, but as far as writing, I will tell you this, agents and publishers will not hold your hand.
Right.
They will not comfort you. They'll just tell you, "I didn't like it. I don't think it's good. I can't sell it.
Not ready for prime time," or whatever.
Yeah.
So
don't, you got to learn right off to get a thick skin.
Yep.
Trust me. I will tell you, there's no one more candid with you than an editor or an agent. Mm-hmm. And so you you need that.
Yes.
Because they're trying to create something that's the best work it can be, and that's going to sell well. And that's what you should want.
Absolutely.
So you don't need to be closed-minded to suggestions people make. Like Sarah said, you can weigh what changes you want to uh-huh. make. But by all means, if you have five different people telling you, I didn't like that prologue, I don't think the book needs the prologue, uh-huh. then maybe you need to start listening.
That's right.
You know, to some of these, you know. So, Yeah, it's a collaborative process, and it can be a difficult process, but it can also be a very rewarding process if you do these things,
Right.
follow these rules, get it right off the bat, and then, And for me, it was wonderful because when I did my first books, every project after I pitched the first one, I mean, I can remember I just sent an email to the editor saying, "Hey, listen, I'm thinking about doing this for the next book." And I didn't have to send elaborate outlines and go through this rigorous query process and all because they knew. They knew me. They knew my work. They
Right.
knew, they could count on me. So, a lot of times it got much more informal after I got started. So my point is, don't feel like, oh God, I'm gonna have to go through this every time. I can't do this. This is too much. Because you won't.
You'll be
Once,
established at that point, right?
yes, once you get your foot in the door there, it all, like everything else in life, everything just gets much easier. So this is just part of paying your dues, if you want to think of it that way, to get into the club.
I gotcha.
And if you're a control freak like Sarah, this may not be the route for you to go. I can't ever imagine her turning her stuff over to a publisher.
To say, Taryn. So, like I said, I've often thought that, like, if when I finish writing this series, and I don't know that I won't write anything else even while I'm working on this Adam Fletcher series, but if I work on, for instance, I've thought about writing a mystery series that takes place in the 1980s. That'll be sort of a light series. You know what I mean? Something like that. I wouldn't. I might would query publishers. I mean, query agents. I don't know whether I would or wouldn't, but I wouldn't rule it out. But I mean, it wouldn't require the same amount of, I mean, the research and the, I guess, the emotional attachment I have to this particular series, because so much of it is from the history around here, where my family's been for centuries and stuff like that. It's very personal to me, so but I wouldn't rule it out. I wouldn't rule it out. So.
No, because like I said, I always think that it wouldn't hurt you. I've told Sarah this before. We don't want to have to discourage people from approaching traditional publishing. But if eventually you don't find a home for your work, then you can still opt to independently publish. One doesn't preclude the other here.
But if you do it, if you do independently publish, be prepared to put some money into it, and be prepared to put some work into it, because I don't, it doesn't help anybody if you want to independently publish a novel and you don't want to bother to get anyone to copy edit it. You don't want to bother to put together a cover that looks professional. You don't want to bother, yes, you can put anything out there, but it's not helping yourself, and you're not helping yourself, and you're not helping anyone in independent publishing when you do that.
And to that point, make sure that your query letter is as professional as possible.
Yes.
In addition to following these steps, just go back and make sure your punctuation is
Oh,
correct,
wouldn't
that
that be
spell
terrible?
check,
Yes,
and
if you submitted a query letter and you use the wrong form of the word your, YOUR versus YOU
Right.
apostrophe RA, little things like that,
If
my
you
goodness.
misspell the agent's name,
Yes.
or you have a typo in the middle of your title or something, it just doesn't look good.
No, no.
So just make sure your query letter represents you to the best it can. But that's pretty much it. So it's pretty simple, don't you think, Sarah, once you know that this is the process, this is how it works. So just
Yes.
do this,
You know what? I want to take a couple of minutes to talk about something, Terrence. And I don't mean to just throw this out at you all of a sudden, but we were talking about this recently. We had the podcast not long ago with Judith Briles. She was a fantastic guest to have on
Oh,
A Writer's
yeah.
Journey. But she was talking about the glory days of being a traditionally published author and what sent her into the direction of independent publishing. But you and I were talking about the fact that it seems like, traditional publishers are backing up a little bit, and starting to be a little more appreciative of authors.
Oh, yeah, and I think the indie explosion has definitely changed the whole, ball field. Now some of the publishers are actually, even big publishers like HarperCollins, are actually taking submissions directly from writers.
Okay.
And before, see, you had to get an agent. They wouldn't, there's no point sending something to the publisher. They weren't going to deal with you. And agents didn't want to deal with you if you didn't have a referral. If you didn't know somebody that could get them to talk to you. And that's not so true now. A lot of agents are now representing debut authors. And a lot, yeah, a lot of things are changing. And some things in publishing, I think just like everything else, there have been cutbacks. For instance, I know my publisher used to do 2 catalogs, send out to all the booksellers, libraries, you know, gift shops, whatever, two times a year in the spring and the fall. Now they only send out 1 catalog a year. You know, so there have been some cutbacks. I think I understand some publishers aren't sending out catalogs at all anymore. They're just putting them on their website. But there's a lot of changes happening, and so I think it's really important for people to know about some resources from people like us that are actually out in the throes of it, on the battlefield, if you will.
Yes.
You know? And we've learned some stuff. I've learned a lot of stuff the hard way, you know, and so
I'm reaping the benefits from what you've learned, because whenever we talk on the phone and stuff like that, you know, you have had so much great information and advice for me. And, you know, I thanked Terrence in the acknowledgments of my book, because, you know, and I mentioned that she's been such a supporter, and, you know, she's been so encouraging, but she also has been great with the reality checks. And she was like, I wish you had said that. That's not, you know, that doesn't sound very good. But I told her it's so important, because as a writer, you know, as an author, if you're publishing books and you're putting them out there for public consumption, you can't just think you're going to publish something and all of a sudden become a best-selling author. It is a ton of work if you're not willing to put the work into it. And this doesn't matter whether you're independent or traditionally published. It is a lot of work. And if you don't know that going into it, you could have a rude awakening, you know.
And it is. And I will tell you, this has been something that's been real struggle for me. Sarah knows. I've always been willing to do the work. I've gone to the book events. I've done the media interviews. I've kept content fresh on my website. I've been very good about all that stuff. But the new face of my, there's a lot of stuff now with social media that wasn't there when I started. And so it's very hard for me now. A lot of people now just, that's all they know. So I don't think it's as hard for people to jump in with Twitter and Facebook and all that as it is for me. I'm like, that's not how we did it. But it is part of the process now. And so many things have changed in the way that the business of publishing, the business of writing, the business of marketing and selling your book, just so much has changed now. And so we're really enjoying sharing all the information with you. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I guess that wraps this episode. And hopefully, you know, any of you will have found this to be good and helpful information, whether you're presently just thinking about going the indie route or whether you're hoping to get a traditional publisher. I think this is all good information, because you never know, you know, you never know where your writing career might take you. And I know Terrence is going to have written up some really good information in the show notes, so be sure and check that out. Her website is terrencezepke.com. That's TerranceZepke.com. Mine is sarahwhitford.com. That's SarahWhitford.com. You can also, as always, subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and also listen to back episodes. And we hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll join us again soon. Until next time, thank you.